This episode is brought to you by Prime. Obsession is in session. And this summer, Prime Originals have everything you want. Steamy romances, irresistible love stories, and the book to screen favorites you've already read twice. Off Campus, Elle, Every Year After, The Love Hypothesis, Sterling Point, and more. Slow burns, second chances, chemistry you can feel through the screen. Your next obsession is waiting. Watch only on Prime.
Girl, winter is so last season. And now spring's got you looking at pictures of tank tops with hungry eyes. Your algorithm is feeding you cutoffs. You're thirsty for the sun on your shoulders. That perfect hang on the patio sundress. Those sandals you can wear all day and all night. And you've had enough of shopping from your couch. Done hoping it looks anything like the picture when you tear open that envelope? It's time for a little in-person spring treat. It's time for a trip to Ross. Work your magic.
Right now. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord. This is another Connected Conversation episode, and this is where we have an opportunity to connect with someone in our space, someone who is making it happen, and someone who is doing right by kids in schools and communities. And I'm really grateful to welcome Dr. Tim Davis to the podcast. Welcome, Tim. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to have our conversation.
For those of you who tuned in to the Pamela Gunther episode, you may have heard a few references and nods to Tim, and they are both connected through Fit and Fun Playscapes. And there's so much to Tim's story and Tim's curricula vitae, if you will. And we are bootlegging this conversation as best as we can. But Tim, it is great to have you here. And I know, I mean, your gig is all over the place in a good way, and it kind of fits in with movement. You are a professor for the physical education department at the State University of New York, SUNY, for those of you New Yorkers up there in Cortland. You've also earned degrees from California State University at Chico. You've got your PhD in early childhood ed and adaptive PE from UVA, the University of Virginia, a couple of hours north of me here in North Carolina. And you are also the director of the Sensory Integration Motor Sensory and Multisensory Environment, and the executive director of the Adapted Physical Education National Standards and Certification Program through the National Consortium for Physical Education and Individuals with Disability. I got to take a breath after that, man.
You got to love special ed acronyms. I tell you, we're good at it, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Not that we're predetermining anything, but anyway, you bring so much, but tell us, I guess for starters, Tim, how did you kind of connect to the Fit and Fun Playscapes? How does all of your background and expertise connect itself to Fit and Fun?
Sure. Well, that's a great story. And, at the end of the day, I am a physical education teacher. My emphasis is adapted PE. I will always and forever be a person who loves to work with kids and engage kids. I just happen to be a teacher trainer now, which is fabulous. I get to do both. I get to work with kids out in the schools, get to work with teachers, and I get to work with future college teachers, or college students, I should say, and future teachers. So it's a win-win. I was at our state physical education conference, and my wife, who's a middle school adapted PE teacher here in Central New York, she's a Teacher of the Year award winner in adapted PE for the state of New York. She came over and she's like, "Hey, you got to come over and see this stuff. This is pretty cool." I'm like, "What is it?" She said, "Oh, this is, I see these pathways and these rollouts, different patterns that kids can move on." And, I look at them and I was a little bit, all right, we'll look at them. We'll go from there. And that was kind of my first introduction to Fit and Fun. And quite honestly, I knew immediately that the equipment was going to work very well. I'm a huge fan of toys, as you can kind of tell in my lab behind me. And I'm a huge fan of portability, right? I have to be able to pick up my equipment as an itinerant adaptive PE teacher and move from one space to another space. Like I mentioned, I might teach on the on the out in the foyer in the front of the office, or I might be in the hallway, or I might be on the stage in the gym, because there's just not enough space. So as adapted PE teachers, we know the importance of being able to pick something up and move it and do it quickly and efficiently. So bouncing from schools to schools was my first teaching job. So that whole notion of being portable was really important. And then once I started talking to Pam at Fit and Fun, you know, she really took a strong interest in creating sensory pathways. And at the same time, I have this space here, the Sensory Integration Motor Sensory Lab here at SUNY Cortland, that's dedicated to helping teachers understand kids who, you know, who struggle with sensory processing issues, right? Kids who have anxiety, kids on the spectrum, kids who just have difficulty with all of this sensory input coming at us at once. This population of kids struggle with being able to integrate that and make sense of it to then act on it, right? So as I looked at her work and talked to her more, she just dove right in and she learned more and more about what I do. And so we developed this common language, which was great, you know, her in the business world, private sector, me in the public education sector. And that's really how we came together and saw the benefits of how we could work together.
That's awesome. And for those who are tuning in and may not be familiar with the term adaptive PE, maybe just an explanation and background for that. I know as principal, it is something that is very important to me in my role in terms of ensuring kind of the total access for all kids.
Right.
But for those who may not be familiar with the impact and the importance of that term, what is adaptive PE?
Well, adapted physical education is just individualized PE for kids with disabilities. And now not all kids with disabilities qualify for adapted PE services. And they, you know, just like in special education, you have to qualify for services. So not all kids with an IEP, not all kids with a disability qualify for these services, but the vast majority of kids with disabilities are served in general PE. But there's a percentage of children who would benefit from separate individualized adapted physical education. And so we follow the federal law, IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And, you know, understanding that law, special education within the definition of special ed is physical education for children with disabilities. And that's a mandate, right? So the way we deliver those services, and it is a service, not a class, it's a service called adapted PE. Across the country, you know, there might be 13 states that might have that has information or criteria in their State Department of Ed regs, but the vast majority, unfortunately, don't. So anyone with a PE degree or a PE license can teach adapted PE to a child with a disability. And that's really, you know, it's a disheartening type of thing. You've got somebody without much knowledge about disability providing a service to a child. And so as a parent and as a teacher trainer, my mission, you know, is to get information out to teachers so they can make better decisions about PE for kids with disabilities.
And one of those kind of better decisions, and you touched on it, and it actually, for those of you that, and I don't want you to move your phone, just, you know, because we've got it at a nice place. But, yeah. But for those of you that are viewing the podcast, whether it's on YouTube or Spotify, Tim is in a very unique space.
Get over my shoulder there.
Yeah.
Over there.
There we go. Hold your breath. And from what I think you mentioned, it's a sensory room and some of that sensory integration is important, you know, or potentially important if a student has some challenges with sensory integration. So what is that?
Well, let's look at it this way. Number one, we have all of us, all beings, right? We have eight senses, eight primary senses. Our typical five, you know, vision, touch, taste, smell, you know, sight, sound, all that basic stuff. And then vestibular, you can see me rocking back and forth. I'm sitting on a vestibular chair. That's part of our lab, right? So vestibular is a huge piece throughout our lifespan. As we get older, it's really critical. Balance, very important. As we're younger, balance is essential. The next, you know, the seventh one is really proprioception, or pressure. How much pressure and where am I at in relationship to other things? You might see kiddos walking down the hallway with their hand on the wall. That's a kiddo seeking perceptual or proprioception as they walk along the wall. We see that all the time, right? The last one is the one that really is intriguing, because it's really come out to the forefront over the last 3 years with COVID and everything else, is interoception. Is how do I feel internally? How am I feeling in regard, not just my soft tissue, muscles, you know, things I've got to go to the bathroom, the basics, but how am I feeling? How am I addressing anxiety that builds up in my body, because one, I'm not moving, or two, I'm not a very good mover, and so I'm a little bit afraid to go out there with everybody else and be put in that situation, kind of like the old classic round robin reading, like, right, that kid, I'm not a good reader, but here I'm counting the number of kids before it gets to me. And so we don't even think about what we're going to do, or let alone listening. And that happens all the time in PE. That happens all the time. And when kids go to recesses, they just don't have the confidence in their shoes to be able to play. And boy, if they do, you can see it. But if they don't, you can see it as well. So those eight senses are absolutely critical to development for all of us. When it comes to kids with disabilities, that many kids will struggle. Kids on the spectrum, especially, might struggle with too loud, too bright. You notice the lights in here, you got a good look at them today. These follow the sun, so they go from sunrise to sunset, and they're indirect lighting. So I'm not sitting there like the classic elementary, middle school, high school, where I've got that fluorescent light beaming down on me all day. You know, if you just do this, you'll get a sense that it's too bright. So, you know, kiddos will use a lot of different ways in which to manage their sensory system. And if they struggle with that, most kids, you know, most adults, we know if music's too loud, we just turn it down. Yeah. If it's something we don't enjoy, we just move away. Kids don't have that option, right? So a lot of times. So sensory processing disorder is definitely something that's in the literature. It's on the rise. It's connected with children with autism and other types of issues, but more so now in public schools today with anxiety and social emotional learning.
Wow. That you know, typically we look at senses as being the five classic, and mm-hmm. so and really they're eight, and all the more reason in the wake of COVID and research and students, you know, with disabilities who are dealing with anxiety, that we really have got to be in tune, in touch. There's a level of empathy. So how, as a teacher trainer, do mm-hmm. you embed that sense of empathy? I mean, can empathy be taught? I mean, I know that's a big driver for the whole gig for serving students with disabilities is empathy. So how do you convey that to your students and student teachers?
Well, I think that's a great question, Sean. And a lot of, you know, everybody struggles a little bit with that. But at the end of the day, we find the commonality. And you know what? Movement is a universal language. It's the most beautiful thing that's out there for us to do, right? If you think about that notion of universal language, it's awesome. I can go to another country and play with kids and do a tag game. And, you know, and we get it. We all know, right? We all know, because we're confident in our ability to move, run, jump, skip, hop, throw, kick, strike. And whether I do that from a chair, or whether I do that with a walker, or whether I just do that because of, you know, my movement patterns are going to be different, we start with that idea that we're more similar than we are dissimilar, right? So when we look at the sensory system, it's the same thing. We all have different sensory abilities, and we all have different ways in which we manage that sense. Some of us can go on that roller coaster over and over and over again. Some of us, like, nope, not me, not happening, right? So everybody's going to be a little bit different in how they move and how they engage. The idea of connecting on it to empathy, if you will, from that social emotional learning part, you know, quite honestly, is to say we are more the same then we are different. No matter what part of the world we're from, or what language we have, no matter how we move or what we do, play, and the ability to be confident wherever we play, confident in our shoes is kind of my mantra, is how do we get our kids, no matter what ability range, to be confident in their ability to play. Now I'm confident in my core to go ask somebody to play. Now there's that social component, right? There's that emotional component. I'm not afraid to be called out in front of my peers. I'm not afraid to lose. I'm not afraid to do some of these things. And unfortunately, I think, you know, not to point to COVID, but kids just didn't engage. They just didn't play. And so now, and I'm so glad you're an administrator, Sean, because at the end of the day, principals and school administrators need to embrace the idea that movement throughout the day, not just PE, but right, movement in the morning, in the afternoon, in between classes, is the essential building block or glue, if you will, to really learning and self-regulating, right? Being able to self-regulate all of this sensory stuff flying around us, all the things coming at us on our phones, right? Oof. Mm-hmm. Oof, tons of stuff there. And being able to do that. And so, you know, swinging back to a sensory pathway, if I have it in front of me, I have that visual cue that I learned in PE. I know how to jump. I know how to hop. And then I see that same movement, or I see that same picture or sticker or artwork, if you will, on the ground in the hallway. I know how to do that. I see it on the playground. I know how to do that. I see it on the sidewalk. I know how to do that. So a child with autism, for example, connects on that visual level, and we create a notion of sensory continuity from one environment to the next, even drawing it into the classroom. And so I see a win-win every time I step into a building that has a school administrator that says, you know what, movement is at the number one or top three of the things we work on in this building. I'm like, that's awesome.
And we're teaching the whole child. I mean, and that's something in my gig as a principal, like I really try to encourage, let's get out of the classroom. Learning doesn't have to happen. You know, there's different ways that movement, you know, helps create muscle memory and create learning experiences and meaningful experiences. You know, Tim, as you're talking about recess, you know, and I was thinking back to a tough moment for me as a kid, you know, was being picked last for kickball, or basketball or what have you. And it would, man, all kinds of emotions, shame, embarrassment, sure, humiliation, sense of belonging. But at least, and if I think about students who struggle with sensory integration, who struggle with movement, you know, at least I was picked. There are students who are not being picked at all,
sure,
because of how they learn and how they express themselves, or how they have that category of disability. So how does a classroom teacher create that culture of inclusion and sense of belonging through movement, which is essential.
That's a beautiful thing you just said. It's difficult to do, but it's, you know what, it's common sense on some levels. On others, it's a little bit tougher. So first off, I'd say to those school administrators, hey, think about transforming your playground environment so that you don't have to pick. You can have opportunity to move in different places. So that means you have to have visual cues painted out on the asphalt, or, you know, your zones, if you will. You have different zones where this zone I'm playing competitively, this zone I'm playing socially, this zone I'm playing independently. So, I mean, there's ways in which lots of things out there that we can do and Fit and Fun can do, quite honestly, that can help school administrators address some of those issues on the playground. If it's just a black open space, well, what's the motivation? The second thing too, that you mentioned, you know, our physical education curriculum is far past the whole notion of, you know, having students or kids pick teams and things like that, but it still happens. And it certainly happens at recess and different times. But again, it's about what's presented, what's out there. And so, you know, I often will think of that social emotional learning piece, and you talked about empathy. So here's, here's a strategy for any of your teachers to pick up and use. I mean, like this fall, right now. So they get a set of stencils that might be a hopscotch, logs, frog jump, footprints, things like that, right? We can take that out on the sidewalk, and the kids, let's say, you know, Mr. Sean's third grade class, they are given a problem-based learning approach. They say, you know what? Yeah. Our problem is we need more kids to move on at recess. Yeah. How can we get that to happen? And here's what we have. We have these stencils. So right away, the kids start planning and drawing and thinking about what's the pathway, the sensory pathway, that's going to get more kids engaged and involved. They take it out. They trace it. They don't need to color it in. They just trace the picture. And the kids in the other classes at recess are like, boom, they want to go see what Mr. Sean's class did, right? Mm-hmm. So they line up and they start moving and playing. While we're doing that, kids are moving different ways. And I'm watching. I'm not a great mover, but he is. I'm going to watch that kid move. And we get lots of ways to express and show how we move. And we learn how we move when we do that. Now, the beautiful thing is you take that same set of stencils and it moves on to, you know, Mr. Davis's third grade class or fourth grade class. And they take it for 2 weeks and they do the same thing. Hey, now all of a sudden, though, you can slide in. Hey, you know what? Jamal uses a walker. Does anybody have an idea on how we can ensure that Jamal can play? Or Raymond has autism. Is there a way you guys, what do you think about that? Oh my gosh, Sean, you can see it. And I know you're a teacher. You can feel it. You can feel it, how the excitement goes in kids when they're given a problem as basic as how do we get kids to move on the playground. They're going to go with it and go with it and go with it. They'll think about it over the weekend. They'll draw. They'll come in with drawings, doing different things, you know. And then, of course, pathways can go a lot of different directions, right? I mean, at the end of the day. So it becomes a school-wide project that's focused on social emotional learning, quite honestly, in an empathetic way, so that the backside is kids start thinking about other kids and you win.
It's beautiful, Tim. And there is something about that kind of uninhibited, unfiltered mindset that kids already have. And when you provide that opportunity for a child to have voice, and to give them kind of a problem solving opportunity, and they see it as, oh wow, I'm doing something for the school, or man, this is a grown up thing, and it's a chain reaction of empathy. Really, really, kind of what you just shared is kind of a adaptive version, if you will, of design thinking. You know, that, I mean,
absolutely.
That's which is driven by empathy. And again, it's a win-win. It's a win-win for general ed kids. It's because you're creating empathy for special ed kids. It creates all kinds of.
Everybody gets to move, right? Everybody gets to go out and experience what Mr. Sean's class built. Wow. That's awesome. Okay. You know, let's keep doing this for the next, you know, 6-8 weeks while we're outside. And then all of a sudden now we're inside. What are we going to do inside? Well, you know, there's rollouts, there's different things that we could use, different pathways where we can incorporate some of those same things indoors, you know, with stickers and other types of things. So, you know, at the end of the day, you can perpetuate movement throughout the year. And that's really the end game, and getting kids to think like, you know, I'm not the greatest mover, but I can still move on this. And I'm confident to be able to go do that and not worry about what people think, or, you know, kids laughing at me, because we're all moving together.
Now I want you to put on just for a second, your Dr. Davis scientific research hat. And I know the answer to this question. But I really want you to pitch this and sell this. So in this, unfortunately, we got test scores, right? And we got standardized tests, and that's sadly for. Oh, that's okay. Good save.
I knew it was going to fall.
That's all right, man. You see, your phone picked up on test scores, and it was like, oh man, here we go. So, but. You and I both know as educators, as folks have researched this, that movement has an impact on learning. Movement has an impact on the brain and so many things. And I'm not saying that I want you to make the case for movement and test scores. I don't want you to go down that path. But unfortunately, there are folks that subscribe to that. But I want you to make that case with all of your knowledge as best as you can. And I know you're going to do it. Why is movement so important to learning? You've mentioned movement is important to emotional growth and the sense of belonging, but why is there a clear connection between child movement and child learning?
Well, I believe that, you know, exercise, even though I'm a little heavier, exercise and physical movement is the answer really to a lot of health issues, cognitive issues, social emotional issues, and motor issues, right? The things that we need to work at. So right away for me, movement is an obvious answer. And there's just such a tremendous amount of literature out of the medical industry, medical world that speaks to the benefits of movement in terms of our overall health. And I like to talk about sensory health. I like to talk about all those eight senses as sensory health. And that helps me as a whole child. Well, if I'm struggling in one or more of these areas, then, you know, again, what's my go-to? It's movement. That's how I'm going to be able to learn to integrate my senses is through movements like crossing midline, doing motions like this, you know, all different types of stuff where kids struggle with the integration of their senses. And there's a whole tremendous amount of literature in occupational therapy and physical therapy that speaks to, again, the benefits of movement. I think more just on a anecdotal level, there's tremendous amount of resources. And one, if I could plug one particular book, it's by Dr. John Ratey, R-A-T-E-Y. It's called Spark. And he uses all the scientific literature to speak to how to improve, you know, your overall well-being, which means, you know what, I'm going to feel good about that math problem one way or another. I'm going to be able to be clear and thoughtful in the way I approach it. And unfortunately, as kids sit all day, our brains become sedentary. The brain actually begins to shut down. And Dr. Grady's book speaks to the brain and what the brain does and doesn't do when it's not engaged. So again, I go back to the idea that sensory is really the, you know, sensory based activities are for all kids. And if I'm a classroom teacher, I want to do things that encourage my teachers to encourage my kids to do sensory based activities because it wakes up their brain, right? So when we cross midline, boom, my brain's firing. When I'm doing something like taking a pool noodle, a little tiny piece of pool noodle, I got one laying around here somewhere. And you just pop it, right? Just pop it.
Yeah.
So this is an easy thing. It's a little popper. It's a fine motor, but I can cross midline to do that. Now, have every child in your class, Can I run away for a second and grab?
Yeah,
grab
you one? Got it, man. Please.
I'll be right back.
As you look at that room there too, you can see.
Oh, yeah, you bet. Yeah. I'm a mover. I love to move, but here we go. All right.
Awesome.
Pool noodle.
Yeah.
Pool noodle, right? Simple little thing. Hold it in a C fashion. Boom. Pops right out, right? You get every kid in your class, Sean. Every kid in your class has two of these. And on three, it's your birthday today. And we're going to celebrate your birthday with fireworks. Boom. Everybody goes at the same time. Oh. Wow. So now all of a sudden you got all this auditory stuff. You have the perceptual motor tracking. And we're still sitting. We're not moving. But our brains are super engaged. And every time you bring that out as a teacher, that bag of all those pool noodles that you just cut up from the dollar store and put them in a bag, when you bring that out, number one, it's somebody's birthday. Yeah. Number two, everybody in the class is going to go, oh, it's somebody's birthday. I'm so excited. Yeah. They get a pop for like maybe 45 seconds to a minute, minute and a half. And then it's like, all right, we're done. Put it back in. But their brains are firing, which is what learning is all about. Combine movement and brain function and excite that mover, excite that learner. Now you know, when I talk about anecdotally, how do we get a kid to learn? How do we get him excited about learning? Let's do things that are exciting.
And that excitement adds to the sense of belonging, the sense of inclusion. You're building culture. You are building, and then that energy, you know, creates all of those things, create momentum for the next thing. It's a great transitional activity. It's that break that we need, you know. And the other thing that doesn't help, and you mentioned this a little bit, and I think we talked a little bit about this before, is, you know, with COVID, definitely has and still has an impact on learning and the whole child. You know, we have students and kids, unfortunately, who aren't moving for all kinds of reasons. One of the biggest reasons, I think, is social media. I'm guilty of scrolling at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'm guilty of defaulting to that. And kids, you know, unfortunately, it probably creates, I know it creates challenges in my gig on a lot of levels, but I'm sure it creates challenges for adaptive PE teachers and those things. So how do you help your student teachers navigate, you know, through, because again, the whole gig is movement. I mean, I love it. It's that divine universal language that connects us. You throw a ball to somebody, they're going to know, you know,
I think that one of the first things that I do, Sean, is I try to make sure my student teachers, my teachers that I go out in the field with have a different set of lenses when they look at the kids this fall. A new set of lenses, not a lens that's focused on behavior or, you know, every teacher, if you're a teacher, you know this feeling. You're driving to work, you got a coffee or a Diet Coke, and you're saying to yourself, or a water, whatever it is that kid going to be there today? If that student's going to be there today, it's going to change the outcome of my class, right? And instead of worrying about that, instead of thinking, you know, what we have to think about, what can I do differently? And one of the best ways I like to do it is help give my teachers a new set of lenses to look at kids rather than a behavior, look at kids from a sensory perspective. How are they managing the sensory system? Or when they get to school after that bus ride, after that, you know, that period of time when they're locked in with all that noise and the smells and everything else that goes on the bus, a lot of stuff. Do they have an opportunity to help to move, to like help decompress from that? You know, just going to school is a lot of anxiety. We have kids that won't go. They just won't go because of the level of anxiety. And so how do we address that so that we get kids wanting to be there? Well, give them movement opportunities and start with their ability. And so I like to do things before school, you know, put out some rollouts, have some pathways, have some things that kids can engage. There's nothing more fun, quite honestly, than to be a teacher and to do hopscotch with a kid right next to you as you go down the hallway. I mean, think, you know, you're an adult. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's fun. And the kids are like, that's cool. Mr. D, Dr. D, he can move too. That, you know, it's fun. And so again, it's, you talk about creating an atmosphere. Yeah. Well, it starts with those individual teachers having a different set of lenses, the way they look at kids. How do they perceive kids? Are you a behavior issue, or is it just something going on in the sensory world? So my mission has been to try to change teachers' perspectives on how they look at behavior in their classroom. If I've got a kid who's up and moving all over the place, he's a seeker. He's seeking perceptual motor, or she's seeking perceptual motor. It's not that, hey, you need to go back and sit down. That's a behavior. Hey, why are we up and moving? That's the question. Maybe it's time to get everybody up and moving. And then once we get that movement opportunity and not sensory break, no. No such thing as a sensory break in my world, Sean. It's all about sensory opportunity. Because if I say, hey, Sean, we're going to take a break, you're out. You're gone. Your mind just left the room. So it's about sensory opportunity. So Sean, help me spread the word that sensory opportunities are for everybody, and they're great. And they're like using the pool noodles, or just getting up and doing a lazy monster stretch, or a go noodle song, just get the wiggles out, or whatever it is. Those are movement opportunities throughout the day that help us keep our brain engaged and fired and our learners learning.
And that is something, you know, Tim, that if you're going to create change, if we're going to create change, if we're going to shift paradigms, a lot of that comes in the words that we use and the connotation that we use. So, you know, we talk about brain breaks, right? But I like this. It's a brain opportunity. It's a movement opportunity. It's still part of learning. No, we're not taking a break. No, this is still because, you mentioned break. Shoot, man, I'm going to check out or whatever. And then, and then the other thing you've mentioned, and if I was keeping tally, I think I've heard the word behavior at least 20, 30 times from you. And folks, when we talk about behavior, regardless of what stakeholder you are in education, it has a negative, it's a negative thing. It's a punitive thing, but behavior is a form of communication. That student that is
all behavior is communication. Thank you, Sean. That's great.
That's the gig. And so what is it that this student is saying to me, especially if this student has some challenges with one of the eight senses, or if there's a deprivation there, or if there's a gap there. So I think that's key. Part of that is the language and words that we use. And I like your analogy here for those of you listening. Tim's wearing glasses just like I am, and it's we got to choose our lens, and we have to choose the lens with some intentionality. Speaking of intentionality, Tim, I know you've done a lot of consulting with Fit and Fun, and so what are some, and you've made reference to some of the products. I know that the stencils and things, but what are tell me a little bit about some of the work or ideas that you've shared with Fit and Fun that have added to this kind of shift, this paradigm shift in service for kids.
I think in the beginning we had I had a long conversation with Pam about the word sensory. We'd like to slap a word in front of a lot of it's a sensory this or it's a sensory that. Well, really, what makes it sensory? Come on, show me what sensory means. I'm crossing midline, right? I'm stimulating my sensory system. Sensory means I'm using my legs. I'm jumping. I'm hopping. I'm stomping. I'm doing something to stimulate my sensory system to the environment that I happen to be in. Wall push-ups, great one. How many kids do not move heavy things? They never pick up anything heavy anymore, ever. And they never slam it down or throw it by any means, right? In this space behind me, you can pick up a heavy object and slam it down, right? Kids don't get these big muscle, big movement opportunities to stimulate their perceptual motor areas. And so we see kids who sit in kindergarten and pre-K for way too long, get up and go all over the place. So, going to your question is like, how do we connect that? Well, through Pam and through her willingness to learn more about my passion of bringing those two things together, we refined and refined the pathways that she has and made them more purposeful, gave them, greater flexibility or opportunity to move and do different ways in which to engage the movement pattern, because there's no right or wrong way to hop, jump, or skip or leap. I mean, I have criteria, performance criteria, but hey, your jumping pattern is different than my jumping pattern. Nothing wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that. So at the end of the day, it's about understanding and globally thinking about our movers in a meaningful way. And so, connecting that sensory component to pretty much all the stuff that we have, we talk about sensory continuity, the critical, important part of seeing it here, knowing how to do it in both places to help kids transition their skill patterns or generalize their patterns from one environment to another. It is essential. We don't give kids opportunity to do that. We teach them these things in physical education, then say, well, go off and do it on your own. But if I don't have the pattern, if I don't have the ball, if I don't have my friends, if I don't have the instruction, I'm going to go home and sit. I'm going to play, you know, some game on my tablet, unfortunately, and kids don't move enough. So again, I'm a huge fan of sensory continuity, bringing that to light. So our mission with PAM has been to refine the information. We put out blogs. We work with schools all over the country. We just got back from Oklahoma, Bethany Children's Hospital. Big shout out to that group. Man, they work with some beautiful kids and have an amazing way of integrating their services so that, you know, it's not in a vacuum. You're not working, you know, just independently. I have to work as an interdisciplinary team. And isn't that a beautiful idea to say, our children are taught on an interdisciplinary level, right? I mean, it's, you know, so easy to say, so hard to do. And movement is the glue that ties that all together, you know, whether it's a problem-based learning model or mm-hmm. whether it's a universal design approach to helping kids, or whether they're, you know, a lot of schools right now are in the midst of making sensory rooms, building sensory spaces. But those sensory spaces need to be for everybody.
Yes.
Everybody, not just the handful of kids that you think have some sensory issues, because we're all sensory beings and we all have a sensory need. And that's a critical part of education, I think, right now in today's world.
Beautifully stated, Tim. What's next for you? What, I know you got a new semester coming up and you probably yep. have got some student teachers that need some support, but what else you got on your set list or your playlist, man?
Wow. So there's some really great stuff. We have, you know, a lot of conferences that we attend and present at. I'm working with my colleagues right now on improving the way physical education teachers use language to communicate with children with autism. So we don't say things like, grab a partner and stand at the top of the key. Right? Think about that, right?
Yeah.
We know it's the basketball key. We know it's the, you know, but I'm going to grab a partner. And so the language that we use is really important. And how we go about talking to our kids is really critical. So I'm working with our communication disorder group on doing some research in that area.